Welcome to Rental Republic.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one, the only Remso Republic podcast. I'm your host, as always, Remso W. Martinez. Go ahead and do me a quick favor. Follow me on Twitter at Remso101. That's R-E-M-S-O-101. Follow me. I'll follow you back. That way we're one big, happy, giant, liberty-loving family. I am here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the best state of the lower 49, as they say, broadcasting you coast from coast outside of the Beltway. You know, it's really funny because we've got a large East Coast audience, and then I look on the map of where everyone is listening from, and we've got California, we've got Hawaii, we've got the great state of Texas, we have people out in the Ozarks. I mean, we come to you from, you know, the swamp itself to discuss the ideas that you're not typically going to find elsewhere. What we do is we try and go ahead and discuss the topics that others might ignore because they either are afraid to talk about it, or they're just not knowledgeable enough. And the one thing that if you've been listening to me for a while, you know, is that I love to bring on people that are smarter than me. I love to bring on people that are experts in their field because I'm just like you. I have all these questions I want to go ahead and ask. And, you know, it's absolutely fun. This season, we've had kind of a theme going on. We want to go ahead and talk about the disruptors, whether it's cultural disruptors, creative disruptors, anyone that's finding a way to go ahead and change the culture. Sometimes it's really good. Uber's not that revolutionary if you think about it. I mean, come on, all you're doing is getting a taxi from an app, and that way you can go ahead and rate your driver and everything, and you could choose what car you bring up. That's not smart. But the fact that we've gone ahead and created something like that, it's completely changed the game. Whether it's, you know, Domino's Pizza. If you talk to the board of Domino's, they don't call themselves a pizza company. They call themselves a technology company that sells pizza. And it's such an amazing time to be alive, and this should be a renaissance of ideas. Instead, what we see is a squandering of it. We are so afraid of, you know, Orwell's 1984, people keeping knowledge away. Instead, we're turning into Aldo Huxley's Brave New World. We have so much information out there, but nobody wants to talk about it. And one of the topics that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, I've been trying to find the perfect time to discuss it, and I think now is that time, is the idea of, we're reaching a point where technology and man are seeming to have a coalition, whether we wanted it to happen or not. We're seeing that merging occur. It's something that I think a lot of people are ignoring. And among certain circles growing up, especially when I was a student at Liberty University, I wanted to go ahead and discuss transhumanism. Now, it's one of those things where when you bring it up, you're going to go ahead and get one of two responses. Either I've been watching too many science fiction films, or I'm being lured by Satan. And I don't have to, you know, believe in something to want to talk about it. If I go ahead and read the Quran, does that make me a Muslim? If I go ahead and research, you know, something like, you know, eugenics or Nazism or something, does that make me a Nazi? No, I want to learn. I want to discover the worldview of these things. I want to discover how they happen, why they are, you know, so affluent, why they keep coming up, why they're reoccurring. The only people that fear knowledge are the people that don't want you to know. And sometimes it's good to learn in the bad. I mean, learn the good from the bad. It's life. We should pursue it. And I have a gentleman on today who definitely has a reputation for himself. He was a former National Geographic reporter. He's the author of The Transhumanist. Well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and let him throw the book because I don't want to spoil too much. I don't want to give him away too much. But long story short, he's running for governor of California. He's a former presidential candidate. Have you guessed it? I think I may have given too much away. I'm excited. I'm sorry. I'm giving too much away. You know what? Forget it. Ladies and gentlemen, Zoltán István, sir, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So I've got to go ahead and throw it out there. The first time I heard of you, I was like, wow, this is rather interesting. This guy is saying that we're going to merge man and machine within my lifetime and a bunch of other things that are worth a discussion. And whenever I try and have a discussion with you about you amongst my more Christian conservative friends, they instantly dismiss it as either absolute poppycock or they try and call you Satan. So I think my first question is this: are you the devil?
No, I don't think I'm the devil. I've been called the Antichrist a lot of times because of Roman blood and some of the other fulfillment of various passages and revelations. But in all honesty, I think what I'm promoting, advocating for transhumanism, merging people with machines, is really a very neutral concept. We're really just trying to eliminate disease and make the human being stronger. And I don't see anything wrong with that. In fact, if I did believe in God, which I really don't, I think that's something that God would very much support.
So for those of those listening that are like, okay, this is like, you know, completely going over my head, can you give a quick description? What is transhumanism? What are you pushing for? And, you know, what's ultimately the pitch for just regular people that think you might be the Antichrist or might not have an opinion of you at all yet?
Well, sure. No, you know, transhumanism is a social movement now comprised of probably around tens of millions of people that want to use radical science, radical technology to improve the human being. And that can be anything from getting disabled people out of wheelchairs through, augmented kind of inner parts and exoskeleton suits. It can be things like driverless cars, simple things like that. It can also be brain implants, telepathy. You know, Elon Musk has a company that's now working on brain implants so we can connect to the web. This is all the field of transhumanism. And frankly, I live in Silicon Valley in San Francisco, and this is really where all this technology is happening. And I can tell you it's probably inevitable unless either somebody steps in the way and stops it. But we're going to, you know, over the next 10, 20, 30 years, start finding a lot more of our body parts made of machines just because they're a lot more durable than flesh, than biology.
And I know you discussed this in your book, and for those of you that thought I forgot it, no, I just didn't want to spoil it. I'm trying to leave some things a mystery, but the transhumanist wager, you go ahead and discuss this. And this is the part that does kind of scare me. I've heard you on other shows, and for the most part, I think we see eye to eye on most things. But my biggest thing always comes down to the choice of the individual. I believe that, you know, if you want to go ahead and opt into this, radical movement of merging man and machine, you should have every right to. And then if you don't want to, you could be as natural and organic as you want. But the thing that you've brought up on multiple occasions that does, you know, it does kind of worry me is the fact that we're going to get to the point one day where you might not have that option. You brought up in a prior interview you did probably about a year ago, you know, what's the world going to be like when you can go ahead and have genetically modified people that have a computer in their brain, they have access to all the knowledge that you'd have on like an iPhone or something, they're super athletes, they're just healthy people, and then you have the rest of us. It's going to go ahead and create a disparity. Do you see this as a movement that's going to go ahead and, you know, have people jump in willingly because they want to see it happen? Or do you think people are going to be coerced because they'll have no other choice when it comes to, you know, the competition that is human life?
Well, you know, coercion is a strange concept because, let's be honest, if you work on the, you know, in some big giant corporation and you're not on social media, you may not be able to even get a job. It's the same thing if you don't have a car and you can't drive to work. So have you been coerced to be a part of the social media environment to better the company's benefit or to drive to work? And the answer is, well, to some extent you have, but that's also the way modern civilization moves forward. And I think transhumanism is going to be the same thing. You know, if your neighbor isn't construction like yourself, but he puts on robotic arms that can carry 10 times the weight and work more efficiently, you know, and he gets the job and you don't, well, you're going to probably have to get those augmented limbs at some point in order to be competitive. Is that coercion? It's a fine line. Maybe it's just a matter of being competitive. And I don't see competition as being coercion. I see competition as a natural right of human beings to try to figure out, you know, who's going to be the best and who's going to make the most money, who's going to provide best for their families. So again, it's a funny philosophical word there, but I really think that technology in itself is neutral and we make it competitive so that we can stay ahead.
I definitely see where you're coming from. And I think when some people try and think of this whole thing, they go from one extreme or the other. You know, I use a lot of movie references, and there was that one Bruce Willis film back in like 2009, I think it was called Surrogates, where essentially you'd plug into a machine and your conscious would be put into, you know, a model type of surrogate person that, you know, it doesn't feel pain, It's a super athlete. You could be like 20 years younger and everything. And what you begin to have is you have this division in society. You have people, you know, on one side of this town that are still riding in horse and buggies, and, you know, they're accepting cancer and sickness and starvation, but they want to live. And then you have everyone in the other side of the city, which is a thriving metropolis, except, you know, people are, they're living in lust. They're going ahead and they're ultra gutsy when it comes to things. They're living a life that you'd see almost in like a video game, so to speak. I think the biggest issue that I've seen from most of your critics is the, you know, the issue of worldview. Would you see transhumanism as a, I don't know, maybe the next evolution in mankind? Or do you see it as, you know, something that has to at first be, you know, kind of a rival to religious institutions and the concept of spirituality? I feel like if, you know, you move one way or another, you're going to have to dismiss one or the other. Either it's going to happen and we have to find a way to work and coexist within the two, or one's going to have to give for the other.
Well, and that's really the central question of this dilemma, and of, I think, perhaps the most important question of the modern age. I mean, you have about 6-7 billion people. The majority of the people on planet Earth are religious, believe in an afterlife. Transhumanism's number one goal is to really overcome death with radical science and technology, something that most experts think is possible within 20, 25, 30 years, either through genetic editing or multiple different, you know, robotic organs or different types of ways of doing it. And of course, you know, religion, especially Christianity, is very much centered on you know, being saved through Jesus and the afterlife and that kind of idea, whereas transhumanism is promising that right now. But in all honesty, I actually think, and I think this is the way transhumanism and religion are going to grow together, is that you could also see the promise of God through the technology that he's allowed human beings to develop. Maybe, you know, having that afterlife or being able to live forever, including loving God forever, is something that's going to happen here on Earth. But of course, it won't be on Earth, because as we enter the transhumanist age, we'll be exploring other solar systems and things like that. So I don't actually see a real central conflict between religion and transhumanism. I just think both are going to have to bend to work within the culture of what's out there. And if we do that, I think, you know, you're going to find that many conservatives, many religious people are some of the biggest technology enthusiasts out there.
Exactly. And you brought up a point that's, you know, it's intertwined with your whole reputation. The first time I ever heard of you, somebody sent me a video clip of you riding in a giant casket. To be honest, it was when you were running for president under the Transhumanist Party. And when I show that to people every once in a while, I'm like, what's your opinion? I mean, they get stumped. And it's like, wow, you know, I want to live forever. And then I've got some people that are like, no, I need to die. It's just, I need to do it. When you tell people that you're trying to overcome death itself, what's the main response you get?
Well, you know, a lot of people say, oh, that's crazy, it's impossible, but they don't really understand the actual evolutionary kind of tract of science. I mean, through genetic editing, we will be able to someday eliminate disease. You know, most people die from organ failure. Well, there are numerous companies right now working on robotic organs. In fact, some people have them. Someone like Vice President Dick Cheney had a valve connected to his heart. I mean,
Dick Cheney is Darth Vader. I mean, let's just get that out there.
No, but the point is that it doesn't matter how, you know, who you are, even poor or rich. A lot of people already have various forms of technology in their body that are now allowing them to live longer and better. But this is about to hit a J curve as the microprocessor gets faster and faster, which is kind of the essence of it all technology. And we can start having robotic hearts. You know, a third of everybody dies from heart disease. So it makes perfect sense to replace this biological pump we have in our body when a third of our loved ones, including my father, recently died from heart failure. So we can improve these things. And I don't see anything wrong with tampering with the human body to make it better. Like I said, you know, even if you're religious, it's not going to take you away from God. It might even allow you to live closer to God in some ways because you're healthier and you don't have to worry about your health or pain or things like that. I really think the transhumanist age can usher in a golden age of peace, and, you know, people can really follow their own dictates, their own will, and do what kind of things they want to do. I mean, I support libertarian transhumanism very strongly because I believe technology enables us to have so many new freedoms that we've never had before.
Sir, I want to go ahead and touch up on that topic a little bit more, but first we've got to go ahead and pay the bills around here and take a quick commercial break. Folks, you're listening to the Remser Republic. Hang on tight. We'll be right back after this.
Donate with Bitcoin today at RemserRepublic.com/donate.
Join the Remser Republic on Patreon today. Take the show on the go by subscribing to the Remser Republic on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and YouTube. Don't be left out.
Hello, my name is Alex Merced, and I am a libertarian. I invite you to join me in spreading the message of liberty. Come down to alexmerced.com where you can find videos and lots of other media to help educate you about liberty and more. I've also created learneconomicsnow.com as a quick way to show anyone the basics about economics. Libertarian101.com, a great starting place to learn what is libertarianism, how to get involved, and how to move things forward. Intro2liberty.com where you can learn more about how to spread the message of liberty through positive messaging from people like myself, Larry Sharp, and Michael Pickens. And don't forget libertarianpodcast.com, where you can find an exhaustive list of libertarian podcasts for you to enjoy. This is Alex Merced. Follow me on social media such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and more. And thank you very much.
Hey guys, Tim Preuss here, and I wanted to take a minute and invite you to stop over to PreussPodcast.com and give our show a listen. We've got in-depth commentary on the issues that matter to you.
These hookers. Fucking whores are out there.
These hookers, man, I tell you.
Yeah, that's like the most contact I've had with the hooker.
It's them yelling at
them
you.
Them yelling at me on Twitter.
We break down the most pressing issues of our time.
This what? Large lady with, like, tight clothing on. Not appropriately linked tight clothing either.
And we get the most intelligent analysis from friends of ours like Jeffrey Tucker.
You pulled over engine trouble and what happened? I don't know.
Seriously though, we love putting on a show that both entertains and educates. We're growing and we'd be thrilled if you joined us. Check out PreussPodcast.com for more. That's PreussPodcast.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We're going to go ahead and continue our conversation from earlier. Sir, you mentioned the phrase libertarian transhumanism, and that is something that's, you know, beginning to get more of a buzz in the liberty community as we're starting to see this, you know, this urge to want to transcend the issues of now, the issues that mankind has always faced, death, disease, disability, everything. It's becoming more mainstream now than it ever has been before. So right now, you're currently running for governor of California, and you're seeking the Libertarian nomination. Why are you doing that? Why didn't you go and try and, you know, run for the Transhumanist Party of California? I'm assuming there is one. Why didn't you try and do that? And why do you think that transhumanism and libertarianism are, you know, ideological friends, so to speak?
Well, you know, to begin with, I have sort of always been a libertarian because I, you know, first off, I've been covered a lot of war zones for National Geographic. The one thing you see is that dictatorships are terrible and oppressive.
You don't
say. So it
makes
you love you love freedom for that reason alone. And I've seen some terrible things. And then I had a real estate business. And if anyone's ever been in real estate, you realize the government is there to just make your life miserable and put restrictions and inspections on anything you can do. So I had been a libertarian for a long time. And then I wrote my novel, The Transhumanist Wager, which actually turns out to be one of the better-selling libertarian novels of the 21st century. We're up to around 50,000 copies now. And it's really been covered broadly by media. And while some people say, oh, it's not fully libertarian, you know, it's about a bunch of people disappearing into the ocean and creating their own society so they could have their own liberties. It's very libertarian at its core. And I think ultimately, you know, these things led me to want to be a part of the Libertarian Party. Now, I ran for the presidency under the Transhumanist Party because that was kind of like, you know, I was trying to see what was happening. And of course, I wasn't going to win the nomination against Gary Johnson anyways. So it made sense to try to push science and technology forward for a small political party. But they don't have the infrastructure that the Libertarian Party does. So now for California, it's like I walk in and all of a sudden there are, you know, 500,000 people in California voted for Gary Johnson, the presidential campaign. So I might be able to tap into that 500,000 people. And frankly, that's a lot of people. And that's one of the main reasons that I'm now with the Libertarian Party is that it really does have very good infrastructure and a lot of assets, a lot of people that get to the polls. And I'm trying to tap into that by pushing a science, technology, and very strong kind of rational libertarian angle. And so far, it seems to be working pretty good. I'm pretty excited about my campaign.
Definitely, and rightfully so. I mean, you're getting a lot more attention than most third-party candidates, and just in terms of, you know, the uniqueness of a candidate, I don't think anyone's really had the ideas you've had before, and even if they've had, they've never been as open about it as you. Apart from the transhumanist angle aside, one of the things that you've made a part of your platform is something that is catching, you know, I never thought I'd see this idea be popular amongst progressives or libertarians or conservatives. It seems to be something that's one of those middle ground ideas that people are like, yeah, it just kind of makes sense. It's the idea of universal basic income, UBI. It's been touted by everyone from Mark Zuckerberg to Milton Friedman. And I was a supporter of it for, you know, maybe like a brief second in my life. But it just, there's just so many things about it that just, you know, creates somewhat of a slippery slope scenario. If I'm going to go out and say taxation is theft, then I'm saying, okay, well, you know, we'll eliminate the welfare state by just giving everyone a lump sum check every year, and that way they'll be okay. I mean, you look at that solution right there, and what are you going to have the next day if you give everyone X amount of dollars? The next day, you're still going to go ahead and have income inequality. You're going to have people that, you know, blew it on hookers and blow or something. So the idea behind UBI, it sounds good, but the biggest problem I see with it isn't the concept itself, but it's the fact that I think people are always going to want more. I believe that individual responsibility is key, and by giving people this incentive, this safety net, so to speak, it can only cause more problems than anything else. Why do you think this is something that is mainstream, and why are you as a libertarian pushing it?
So, well, yeah, and this is a great question. Let me first say that, you know, I do understand the individual responsibility angle. But the problem is those arguments really worked well up until about today, maybe 5 years into the future now. But there's no question that automation and robots are going to be taking the majority of jobs. It's just all the taxi drivers are going to be gone in 3-4 years. All the truck drivers are going to be gone in 3-4 years. All the McDonald's people, all the Lowe's and Home Depot. I mean, there's no reason for companies and CEOs not to replace them with automation, with robots that cost half the price, don't sue the companies, and always show up to work on time. So we are entering an age when automation and robots will start to take virtually all the jobs, and probably within 30, 40 years, the entire economic landscape will be very, very different. I'm not even sure capitalism can actually survive, even though I love capitalism. So what I have proposed is a federal land dividend. And yes, it's essentially a basic income, but we have in America about $150 trillion, maybe more, trillion dollars worth of federal land, most of it in the western 11 half of the United States. And it's empty, sitting there. Like, for example, we have almost the same amount of mineral resources in Nevada that there are in Afghanistan, where we're fighting, you know, $100 billion wars. The point is, we can use those resources of that federal land, sell them off to companies, and those companies pay a small lease to the American people, and every single one of us can get a basic income of $1,700 a month. So my plan is, while it's a basic income, I really call it a federal land dividend. You have to understand that land belongs to the people. That land was always belonging to the American people, to the voters. And somehow the government says, oh, we're holding it in a trust for you for future generations. And I'm like, look, there's a huge amount of poverty. California has 40% of Californians, about 19 million people, live right at, below, or just above the poverty line of $24,000 a year. I feel obligated as a gubernatorial candidate to create a system that does not raise taxes. My plan, federal land dividend, will not raise taxes, but will just simply lease out empty federal land and pay people money so that they have more to afford health insurance. That way we can keep private health insurance, send their kids to school wherever they want to go. I mean, in fact, this is my federal land dividend is a very, very libertarian idea. And I've been seeing it, thankfully, you know, more and more libertarians are grabbing on saying, yeah, this is great. And maybe we don't pay a basic income. Maybe what we do is we completely eliminate taxes with any income we earn from that federal land dividend. To me, it's not necessarily that we have to pay basic income. What is upsetting me is that the American government is sitting on $150 trillion of land and not doing anything about it for me. That's a $500,000 per American, per 325 million Americans. We should have access to that wealth. It's our wealth.
Is this in addition to already existing welfare programs, or does this eliminate or cut some of them?
So this would be entirely in addition, but the thing that I want to do and the reason I support this is it would completely eliminate all these other programs. You can eliminate the Medicare, you can eliminate the welfare, you can eliminate Social Security, you can limit, you can downsize the U.S. government dramatically by implementing this one single program. And the great thing about it is Republicans love it, Democrats love it. And the reason Republicans love it is because they're going to have all this brand new business to tackle, all this new land to develop. You know, I mean, California is sitting on about $3 to $5 trillion of coastal land that's untouched because the environmentalists don't want to touch it. And the Coastal Commission makes sure that no one can develop it. Whereas this could be feeding those people in poverty. And the Democrats are going to love it because it gives essentially, you know, it takes people out of poverty by giving them a real income. I mean, the income we're proposing is literally going to eliminate the lower class entirely. There's going to be no one else, no one in poverty anymore. So it's a program that I think in Congress can actually pass. And that's why I think, you know, the federal land dividend has been getting a lot of attention.
Wow. I mean, this definitely has me thinking at this point. I've got to let you go in a minute, but I've got to ask, what's the biggest thing you want out of this campaign other than being, you know, eventually governor of California? What's the biggest take home message you want people to consider and maybe start implementing in their lives?
Oh, well, sure. You know, I mean, I've said this very openly. Unfortunately, we live in a very Democratic state in California. There's really no chance of me winning the governorship. But what I am doing and planning on doing is running for the 2020 presidential nomination of the Libertarian Party. And really, this gubernatorial run is to introduce a lot of Californians and a lot of people internationally. Because, you know, luckily my gubernatorial campaign is getting a huge amount of attention. 2 weeks ago, I was in Dubai speaking at the World Economic Forum. In January, I'm meeting the president of Chile as a libertarian futurist and talking with her about things and speaking from the Senate. And then later, I'm also speaking behind the vice president of the European Union in Denmark in June. So the attention towards libertarian transhumanism and libertarian futurism is really gaining hold. And so what I'm trying to use is my gubernatorial campaign to essentially get a big push to my 2020 presidential run for the Libertarian Party. But the reason I say that, I know everyone's like, oh, don't discount yourself for the gubernatorial run, but you have to understand California is such a blue state.
It's basically the People's Republic of California.
Yes, yes. So I don't try to pretend to people that there's a chance, you know, anyone can win here. It's just not the way the cards are set out. But I do believe that I have a strong shot at the nomination for the Libertarian Party, and then I could bring some of these new ideas into the Libertarian Party, which I think could really give it a shot in the arm and boost its popularity, its community, its message, and hopefully the entire liberty movement.
Well, sir, you've got a giant challenge ahead of you, but you seem to have something that's bringing many, many new allies and peers along with you. So if people want to learn more about your campaign, discover transhumanism, support you, everything else, how could they do so?
Sure. You can go to my website, ZoltanIshvan.com. And if you want to read my, you know, libertarian novel about futurists, it's The Transhumanist Wager. You can find it on Amazon. And of course, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all the other things. So, yeah, please follow my campaign. We have a lot of fun stuff going on, protests and speeches and things like that. So it's always something interesting happening in my world right now.
Outstanding. Zoltan, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come talk to us. Greatly appreciate it. Best of luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, that's about it. Go ahead and do me a favor. Go ahead and leave me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Helps us trend. We were number 25 in the nation. Can you believe that? Actually, the whole North American continent for news and politics on iTunes. That's ridiculous if you think about it. We beat out some well, all of NPR. But this, you know, this is a small operation. It's just me and producer Ryan, and everything is listener and viewer funded. Go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play. You guys know how I use the internet. And as always, be good to your neighbor. Go out and treat yourself a bit and tune in next week, America. I'm Remster W. Martinez. Good night.
Stay up to date with the latest news and updates by visiting
RemzoRepublic.com.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.